The Share Pickers Weekend Podcast with Justin, Paddy, Peter and Steve. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the Weekend Podcast. I'm joined by Steve. You're right, Steve.
Morning. Oh, sorry, hello. Happy weekends.
Yeah. It's a podcast. And do you know what? It is brassic, isn't it? I'm in my office here, right? There's frost on the windows. I got two little oil heaters going, and I got a heated blanket on my legs, and it's hardly making a dent in the cold snap. It's -3, I think, in this office.
Yeah.
So, last weekend you came down, you stayed in the summer house, which is...
Glad it's not this week.
I know, you probably have died. I'd have gone up then, crack you alive. But Pete, I don't know if Pete's in Poland, apparently. He's always around Europe because, you know, his job is human trafficking. I've told him not to do it, but he earns good money from it. You know, it's morally, you know, questionable, isn't it?
But, you know, he loves his work, though, you know.
He does love his work, yeah. He loves stuffing so
Can't take that away from him.
Stuffing those people into the back of those lorries. And because, you know, it's good margin on that business. But I've said, you know, Pete, you shouldn't be doing that. It's really bad. They just want to come to Britain. It's the land of milk and honey.
Mm. It keeps Paddy happy, though, doesn't it?
Yeah. And Paddy's a driver of the vans. So that's why they always run in Europe. Paddy said he was out clubbing last night. I don't know if that's true, is it? At his age?
Do you know what? Normally, if Pete had said that, I'd be like, yeah, he's just having a laugh. But then Paddy does enjoy a bit of a clubby night out every now and then.
Does he?
Every now and then. Yeah.
I don't see the point of that. The last I went to a club, I think, was I can't even remember. But even then, it was about 10 years ago, probably with you, Steve, in Cardiff or something. But I just thought, I don't belong here. I never really belonged in clubs anyway, but I felt like an old man there, and I just couldn't get into this. I couldn't understand the excitement of people just jumping around, dancing. What's the attraction in that? You get past a certain age, don't you? And when you're not on the hunt for a partner, it's just pointless, isn't it, really? What is it?
I think I probably went a bit longer than most people, only because obviously I used to DJ, so I was kind of into it a little bit more with the music. But I think it was quite a few years ago. I think I was in a club. I was like, I shouldn't be here anymore.
Yeah.
I've probably never gone back other than to see friends who work in them, but not actually really enjoying it.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? I was never ever successful in a club as far as dating is concerned, ever. I think in clubs you have to be a bit of a looker, you know, and tall, slim, handsome, which I am now. But I mean, you know what I'm saying? I tended, whenever I was successful, it's basically I used to grind women down with my personality. And in the end, they just submit and say, go on then, I'll go out with you. So in that way, I was more a work-based person, chatting to people in work, you know, that stuff, or I meet them on a regular basis. I'd grind them down, you know? In a club, it's not that, is it? But first impressions and all that's a bit more superficial, really. So, it was never my successful area for dates. And I suppose yours was the same. It was even work was where you got girlfriends, was it, really? Or dates or friends
I probably dated a few too many girls in the workplace, but... it's not a good place to meet people.
Mainly work experience.
Mainly work experience, yes.
I'll take you under my wing, little girl. Well, not little girl. So last weekend, we went to Boom Battle Bar and talked to my young people, right? It was nuts, because we turned up there at the one in Southampton about 1:30 on a Saturday. Now, 1:30 on a Saturday, not the time you go out drinking, is it? And we so did that. I booked it that early because I didn't want to be in a busy, really bar, you know, gone sort of in late evening with lots of people. I hate people, generally. That's why I got a cold again, I think, because I had a cold a week before last. I had about 5 days off. I got a cold again. I coughing like a maniac and sneezing. I can't sleep in the family bed. It's not a family
Do you think
bed.
It's got anything to do with the fact that you do your podcast and your stuff from a garage, which is not insulated, at -2?
Well, I don't know. It kills germs, doesn't it? I don't know.
No, it doesn't.
But anyway, we at the 1:30, and what do we have booked? We had axe throwing. You've got to do that first. And didn't the lady say they can breathalyze you?
Yeah, do you know what? Because when we were back in your flat and we were like, do you fancy a drink? I nearly said, yeah, go on, I'll have a beer, because we sometimes do start a little bit early and have. I thought one beer is gonna be fine. Yeah. Yeah, and when we were chatting to the girl who was showing us the
flat, I haven't got a flat. I got a flat in Cardiff.
In your house.
Yeah.
And yeah, when I was chatting to the girl, she said, "Yeah, you can't have any drink." So she said, if she'd smelt beer on us, she would literally just cancel the session. I said, "Does that happen often?" She said, "Yep."
Wow.
And she said, even if they'll breathalyze you, and if there's any sign of alcohol on your breath, they'll basically just cancel the session. They'll take whoever smells of alcohol off it. Yeah. So not even one drink.
So, apparently, that's
the terms and conditions that you have to sign. So you basically sign and saying, if I've had one drink, I'm voiding the booking.
You just smell of it. So it's a good job I didn't use my Carlsberg or Carling aftershave, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that, to be honest with you.
You like that? Oh, okay. So we went there and our pizza said, I'm having breakfast with about 30 people. Yeah, those are the people who can be in the back of the van.
Invite them on the podcast.
Yeah, they've been in the back of the van in half an hour. Eat something now because it's a long journey, kids. All right.
Everyone go to the toilet.
Yeah. It's a slice of bread there, okay? And there's some fresh water from the tap at the back. That's what you talk to breakfast. Now get in the van. I know it's cold. You'll soon warm up. Don't worry. Body heat. So we got there. Did the axe throwing, which, do you know what, is annoying because first six throws, there's three axes, you have three. First six throws, I hit the board, but it just bounced out.
Getting really annoyed by that.
I was
as much as I don't want you to win, at the same time, I was like, this is going to be painful for the next 16 minutes for you.
And it turns out you just alter your distance. You either go a bit closer or a bit further away because obviously the spinning of the axe, not only do you have to hit the board, it has to be at the right angle to get stuck in. And then when I got it, Steve, didn't I, eh? And I had to go further away. You and Pete, right? I tell you what, Steve, right? If there was a camp axe throwing team, I think you'd be in it.
Yeah, do you know what? I did watch the videos back that you filmed and be doing that. I didn't look the manliest of, considering the sport of axe throwing, that should be quite manly. And I really did put that to shame, didn't I?
Yeah, I think they should have a boom battle bar camp axe throwing team. And, goes to the blokes, middle age. You see these guys, are they called bears? Almost like they wear a fluffy feather boa and hot pants, and they've got beards and bellies.
I tell you what, though, if there's an award for the person who mastered the axe throwing the quickest, I think I should win that. I was the first to get it in the board.
Yeah,
I did.
That was quite good. Within an hour, and 20 minutes in, it seemed quite long. Then all of a sudden, it just went by, didn't we? We wanted another game. We were trying to fit more in at the end. But anyway, we got there. Help us won. It was about 20%, maybe, full. Mm. And I thought, well, that's quite good for Help us won a Saturday afternoon. By 3 o'clock, it was busy, very busy. Yeah. By the time we left half five, it was rammed. And basically young people doing all kinds of stuff, like, beer pong and all that. It was absolutely rammed. Where's the cost of living crisis? And it's right outside the ice skating rink in Southampton, so it's right next to All Bar One, so very busy. And there was seemingly no cost of living crisis, was there, at all?
Do you know what I really liked about... Well, there's many things I really liked about them, because they've got the big games machines in there, like where you normally go into an arcade and you'd pay £1 for 60 seconds worth of throwing like basketballs into a hoop, those little games?
Yeah.
But in Boom Battle Bar, I didn't realise this, you actually go and pay behind the bar, you pay for a 30-minute... So everything's in like 30-minute to an hour slots. So rather than... if you'd have paid £1, you'd have literally probably... put away about 30 quid into one of those machines. I don't know how much it was, so it could have been 30 quid, but I don't think it was. But yeah. I quite like that concept of just basically saying you have this arcade machine for the next 15 minutes, half an hour, and you literally have unlimited play on it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we did axe throwing, then shuffleboard is the one, isn't it? I really enjoyed that. We had half an hour on that. We tried to book again. It was booked, so we couldn't get any more. My advice is do the axe throwing, but do an hour at least of shuffleboard, because that's a good little game, and you get better at it. And it just curves nicely down the pitch slope there, because it's odd, isn't it? It's like the bowling alleys. It's that kind of wood, but they put salt on it to make it go smoothly. And I was smashing you at that, but you did catch up in the end. But through luck, it was me against you. But I started off very well at that, didn't I? And then, in fact, I smashed you at the axes as well, didn't I?
You say smashed.
Well, it's because I did.
Me and Pete were playing a skilled game and we did beat you, so...
Yeah, well, fair, yeah, but you know what? We were out of time because it's to 15, isn't it? And so I started off.
I got the axe throwing. I was going to beat you on the axe throwing. I just needed more time.
Yeah, a couple of days. So that was good. And then, we went on to do AR darts. I was okay. It took us a while to get into that because we didn't know the game is. In fact, we didn't actually read. Because every game you picked, eight different games there.
We just started off and didn't really
read what you had to do. And then we said, oh, I know you're not supposed to do that. There's killer on there and all that stuff. And then
do you know what, though? I think the reason for that, though, is none of us were really into darts. Because I was like, I really don't enjoy darts that much. And playing on a normal dart, boy, I'm bored as hell. Although I found that one was actually quite fun. But I think if you were into normal darts, you would find that amazing because the interactivity of the screens and how it works is amazing. Yeah, very clever how it worked.
It was a family next to us, wasn't there? We were like there for 2 hours of the darts. They were there when we got there, and they were like, I think that's all they did. They went and they did that and then just left. But and then we thought we'll stay a bit longer, and we try to book shuffleboard again. No good. And then. We booked the pool table, which was £10, I think, for half an hour. Now, you're right, actually. You think, that's £10 quite a lot for pool. But not really, because if you play pool for half an hour, say it's £2 a go normally, you'd probably have 2, 3, 4 goes anyway in half an hour, wouldn't you? You know? So, how many games do we have?
It's also the stress of in a pool table in a bar, like you put your pound down, you've got that risk, which always happens. Someone puts a pound on after you, so you never have it half hour, then you've got to give it to someone else to play. So at least you know you have it half hour. Yeah. Do you know what? It is a really good concept, you know, and it's and at the same time, you know, it really does make good money out of it as well, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's excellent. And like I said, we went to All Bar One next door. That was quite busy. But like I said, they're just buying drinks in there. In Boom Battle, they're buying drinks and games. So it's double the money for the... And like I said, there was no... You know, when we left, everything was full in there. And I had someone say on Twitter earlier, oh, yeah, this is going to suffer in the cost of living crisis. I don't think it will, because youngsters in there, let's be honest, again, we were probably the oldest in there by the time we left. They have no problem. They don't seem to have that money worries that the older people do. Or, you know, even if they do have money problems, they don't worry about it too much. You know, they just spend. No, they just go, don't care. For them, socialising is it. You know, when you're young, you need to socialise and find a partner. That's it. And that's part of the deal.
Well, it's different to when we were younger. I think when we were younger, it's just all about drinking and going clubbing, whereas now it's more about experiences for kids, isn't it? So it's about the bowling and the boom battle bars and the... Yeah.
So I'd say, even, you know, we walked away from there and we thought, do you know what? I'm glad of the investment. I'm not just saying this, but glad of that. It's an investment, you know? And of course, but it was a Saturday, but we started early. And by the time we left at 5:30, which was quite early. And it was rammed. There aren't many bars rammed, really, like that at that time.
But, to be fair, it was probably a little bit bigger than the Christmas season because you could see one or two parties that were probably Christmas. But I think the majority of the people in there were just groups of teenagers just going for an afternoon out, isn't it?
Yeah, but even Pete said, you know, he works and he's got a few people working with him. He said, we wouldn't mind hiring one of these, actually, for a Christmas do, because they've hired something else recently. It cost several grand for them to hire. I think six, oh, I don't know what it was. But he said we'd hire one of these because essentially it's all there for you, isn't it? I mean, you go out if you're going. That's the thing. You go to Christmas and you're corporates and you are in charge of several people. Say you're a manager or manager director or whatever. Think, what are you going to a Christmas party? Because the word party's in it, so it's got to be a bit of fun. And organised fun normally is a bit rubbish, isn't it? What are you going to do? So think about it, rather than just create games or create some kind of thing. If you go to Boom Battle Bar, it's all there for you. Just go in there, there's drinks there, there's fun already there, there's a proven concept. It's a no-brainer for people. And then you maybe go in for, you have snacks in the afternoon, chips, chicken wings, whatever you want, and then you can go for a proper meal in the night. So,
can I just say, Justin really enjoyed the curly fries.
They were nice, weren't they?
You couldn't stop talking about them. These are lovely, these are.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the third time you've said that, thanks. Yeah, the curly fries are nice.
Yeah, so I recommend if you're a shareholder, I recommend you going and checking out because it is good. You do get into it, and in fact,
and also, isn't it weird though? After we went there, that the share price went quite rallied a bit this week. Is that anything to do with the fact that we went there? I don't know.
Yes, I think it was Steve. Yeah. I think we got suspend so much that
it shot the price up.
But it was encouraging because I went outside before you two, and it was like. groups of lads and girls, but you know, meeting up aside to go in. So they obviously, and because there's a new bar, that's quite good, isn't it? When you think about, you know, it's a new bar in Southampton. It opened in November, end of November, I think. But and already it was well known, obviously, to people. You know, the young, so obviously they're marketing it very well somehow, or just word of mouth. I don't know how they're getting it, but you know, people know of it because that's the worry, isn't it? When you open a bar, no one just turns up. They don't know what you hear. But yeah, it's a good thing that. So yeah, good. Do you know what? Talking about that, I think there's a bit of liquidity. I've seen a couple of microcaps bounce off the bottom quite aggressively. That's a good sign, and. Obviously, it's hard to call where the bottom is, but part of me said, in fact, last week's podcast, I am going to head towards, you know, higher sort of quality, profitable companies now, a bit bigger. But never underestimate the power of a microcap, because you, if you have someone in a bull market, in a bear market, they get hammered. It's about liquidity. I don't know what the best way to explain this. Oh, in fact, here's a good analogy. You know, a shower head. Right. If you go, the reason why, you know, that actual water going in that shower head is not a huge amount of volume. It doesn't need to be, you know. So, but because it's squeezed down into small little pipes and comes out, the pressure goes up. You know, that's a bit like microcaps. If you take the shower head off, you know, there's a bigger hole. The pressure's lower, so you don't need a lot of water to go into the, you know, into the shower head to make it work properly. That's the same with white caps. You know, you shut it off, they shut off completely. But a little bit of liquidity makes them move very quickly. And so I would advise anyone to have, you know, look at companies, hope pipe potential companies that. But you've got to make sure it's, you know, an uptrend in a bull market, because in a bear market they get hammered. They have been hammered, overly hammered. But one or two of those in your portfolio, I mean, I wouldn't get overexposed to them. I wouldn't go crazy. You know, talk about 5-10% maximum of your portfolio exposure. But they can really rally us. Or in fact, GTEC, GTC, just bounced off the bottom. It's been hammered for ages.
Okay, what was the reason for that?
I had no idea. You know, it's, and you're starting to see this now. I mean, XP Factory is a bit more mature. It's now starting. It's going to be operationally profitable. End of this year, probably start next year. Well, next year they are operationally profitable by forecast. But they say the last few months of this year they'll be operationally profitable, so they won't need cash. But I'm talking about companies that are not operationally profitable yet. You know, they have, you should look for, you know, a large market. So are they in the hype sector? You know, there's lots of places like this. I mean, in fact, in mining companies like lithium and all that stuff, or graphite, they're in hot sectors as well. So those kind of things, worth looking at those, but not going berserk on them, because they can do many, many. And typically, these hope pipe potential stocks will be sub 30 million market cap, maybe sub 20. And they will, honestly, in a bull market, rally very strongly. And so it's worth looking around for those, but not going crazy on them, because, like I said, what tends to happen is they'll rally and then do a fundraise. And so they'll come back down. So be careful of what. That's one thing. So the conditions, I think, because pretty much, you know, during the start of this last bull market, I made a decent amount of money on hope high potential stocks. And but the one thing they have to have, first of all, market cap has to be smallish, like, you know, sub 20, 30 million. So they're microcaps. They also have a large, you know, addressable markets, very hot markets. So maybe energy or anything like that, or tech normally, maybe biotech. But also make sure they have cash. That's very important. And so honestly, one of the things you should look at is, have they done a fundraise recently, one of these companies? If they have, given it, you know, a few weeks for the churn, for people to sell stock and all that, then once they've got cash, that's the largest worry removed. And so the story then focuses on the hype and the hope and the potential. But yeah, they're worth having. Do you have any fun? I'm going to blow my nose. I'm blocked.
Yeah, okay. I can hear that. Have I got any fun stocks?
Pete's got C4XD. I know he's got that. Mm.
Well, you say I've got fun stocks that aren't fun anymore. Does that count?
Yeah. What like?
And they're not fun anymore because I can't sell them anymore because they've gone so low.
The thing. Yeah, but do you know what? Sometimes you just got to hold through the cycle. You know, it's like if you miss getting out.
I don't think they're even in this category. I've got do you know what? I don't think I have. No, sorry, I'm looking. I got one. The one stock I can't sell anymore. It used to be. Beacon Energy. Oh, they just changed name, haven't they?
Beacon Energy. What the hell? Right. Oh, okay. Is that? Hang on a sec. Who is Beacon Energy?
Who were they before? Anyway, that's down minus 99.82%. So I have £9 in that stock.
Advanced Energy. They were.
Advanced Energy, yeah. So I physically can't sell them. I literally just can't get rid of that £9 out of my portfolio.
So who were they before? I'm trying to think of them before that.
They were Advanced Energy, weren't they?
No, there's something else before that. Hang on, yeah.
Anyway, that's not. I don't even class that as a stock. That's just one of those things that are stuck in my portfolio I can't get rid of.
Yeah.
Apart from that, no, I'm actually all right with the rest of my... sorry, I got Europa Metals as well, which is...
You still got that?
Yeah, again, that's
they were Andalas Energy. That's right, Andalas.
Europa's the same, similar situation. I tried to sell it not long ago and it just wouldn't let me sell.
The trouble is, in this downturn, I'm not saying getting them yet, because honestly, there's many companies out there. I've spoken to CEOs and brokers and all that, so they're saying it's so hard to raise money. You know, in a bull market, when it's easy to come by, you know, we've had cheap money for 10 years, pretty much, low interest rates. And that's fueled, and you've had, you know, quantitative easing where the central banks have, you know, stimulated basically asset prices pretty much by flooding the market with money. It's been easy to raise money. And so these companies, and you see this, in all the risky assets, in quotation marks, like Bitcoin. The reason why Bitcoin rallied pretty much was because of huge COVID payments from, you know, people sitting at home and buying Bitcoin. So what can I do? You know, I can't go to work. It's lockdown. And you've got cheap money. And so, you know, things like that rally. And then all of a sudden, we've got the opposite now. Everything, the tap is switched off. The easy money tap is switched off. And so these companies, they're loss-making. You know, they've not got any revenue. They've got to find money from somewhere. And it's like, where are we going to get it from? So they're going to hammer it, you know? So that's a bit of a worry. But I think once we're out of this bear market, and like I said, I'm seeing signs of quite a few microcaps rallying recently. So, bouncing off the bottom aggressively, which is a good sign. And the AIM All Share hasn't gone any lower than the previous low it had a few months back. So I think it's a good sign. I'm not saying, you know, it's going to rally straight up, but we'll bump it on the bottom. We'll have a few sell-off days. But I think we're at or close to the bottom. But once the bull market starts again, I think it's, hope high potential stocks with cash in big addressable markets, or even if mining companies, their resource has to be quite big, and so the potential is there. Even though it's a bit of a misnomer, it's a bit of a false economy. We're resource stocks. If you're a small microcap company that owns a big, say, resource of lithium or copper or something, there's no way you're going to get out of the ground yourself, you know? So you're going to have to fundraise, then you're going to have to get a partner involved, then you have debt funding. All this, you know, happens with sort of dilution. So the market cap becomes bigger, becomes less potential then. And, of course, you basically hand over some of the project anyway. But the initial sort of... Do you remember back in the day when we... On Asia Met, for example, resources, you know, we're in that.
Mm.
And that, like, I think it was 10...
Where are they nowadays? Pete still owns them, doesn't he?
I think he does, yeah. But,
or did he sell it...
No, I think he still owns that. I don't know. I did say, you know, it's gone past that. I mean, once we get back into... Because it's, you know, copper as a resource, you know, it's very much needed. You know, it's going to be needed hugely, a lot more than it was previously, because the EVs and all that stuff, all these, Internet of Things and smart devices have a lot of copper in them. You know, EV cars, a lot more copper. Look at that, Asia Met Resources. Back in... I think we bought like 1.5 pence.
I made good money off that, to be fair. I sold at the right time.
It went up to 15 pence. So it was a 10 bagger, that, you know?
I'm not sure if I made 10 bag off, but I certainly made a fair whack off that. And I think I sold a nice chunk at the top, but then sold it as it was coming back down again. But I certainly didn't wait to the bottom.
Yeah.
What's that now then? If it went to 15, what's it now?
Yeah, it's back to, it's back to 1.25 pence.
Okay.
We bought a 1.5, yeah. So, if you look at that is an excellent example. And I do talk about this on webinars. I look at two different kinds of stocks. There's the hope high potential stocks, and if you're in them early, they can rise massively, and you can do very well on them. But they can also have, you know, a very aggressive sell off as well. And then they go through this period of a couple of years for if they ever become successful. I'm not talking about Asia Met, just generally. they'll take, you know, 3, 4, 5 years where they'll just bump along the bottom. And then they have to then sort of get into sort of production and all that stuff, and that costs money. And that rise is a lot more steady, but a lot more sustainable. But, you know, there's hope, several hope high potential stocks got into. And, you know, EVRH, remember that? But VR, like, ooh, it's going to be the next thing. I've never convinced about the model, really. But people watching, you know, concerts on boxes with it, boxes on their head. But that is a 10-bagger. You know, you got Vesarion on like graphene. That did sort of 10 bags as well. And if you look at all those charts now, I think, what is gold, is it? But same thing. When it went massively up aggressively, come back down, then I'm back at where they were. So either you've got to get in early on the hype or wait and get out and wait for the commercialisation of it, if they do get there. And,
I just noticed the E-Energy Group had a 14% rise on Friday.
Yeah. Well, it's been massively sold off, right? I mean, this is not a hope-high potential stock. They are... You know, EBITDA sort of profitable. Next year they'd be operationally profitable, or this year now. But they did a raise because they weren't expecting to do one. They did one via bonds. So directors have loaned the company money, bonds. But they put the announcement out on Friday night. I think that's a ridiculous thing to do because everyone knows a Friday night RNS is not a good RNS. And then in this market, you can't try to hide news. The market will just take your legs from under you. And that's what's happened. It's been massively oversold. And they are now going to be doing, well, they're forecasted to be doing 30 million in revenue, 5 million EBITDA, but about, I think, 3 million in pre-tax profit this year. And yet their valuation is about 12 million. So it doesn't make any sense. There are so many bargains in this. There was a seller in this as well, so a fund started selling as well after they announced this, which has taken down even further. The volume on it's been nuts. It's been like several million a day, and their average volume was below a million. But so I think as long as that seller doesn't keep selling, I think it'll have a very aggressive bounce now, because you're talking about 11 million market cap, and their revenue this year is three times that, which is nuts. So it's literally, two times EBITDA, which is nuts. So a company like this should be, you know, 5, 6, 7, 10 times EBITDA.
So that's the kind of company you'll see rally massively when it goes into a bull market then, I guess.
It's been, never underestimate, right, the jaws of a bear market, how much a company become oversold. And almost like a self-fulfilling, the share price, you know, is self-fulfilling because, like I said, why it's very important to buy trends is because, you know, share price dropping attracts sellers. You know, people just sell because it's falling. That's it. They don't care about the company. And, you know, you can question the tactic of that. You can have a bit more patience to hang on, or just say, okay, I'm getting out. And that's what happens. And conversely, a rally in the share price, share price rising attracts buyers. So if it starts rising now, we need that momentum to change from being oversold because people are selling it because it's going down aggressively to now rallying very strongly. But I think, you know, I said I was very bullish on this company. I still am very bullish. It's a very hot sector. They're growing. If you look at their operational update, they're growing massively. It's like they're doing very well. But it's just that, you know, releasing that news then was not a good thing to do. And it's encouraged all the sellers to come out, dump the stock. And that's why right now, there's so many bargains out there. And the market's about fear and greed. Hang on, I'll blow my nose.
Oh, it's funny, though, like, because, like, we talk about this bull market that's come in, and I look at all my stocks, and some of like my really good stocks are like 50, 60% down. And I just think, in the bull market, is that just going to recover them back to how they, in fact, I say back to how they were? They were in quite a big profit, some of them. So, like, it's quite a big one just to get back to break even level, let alone into profit. It's going to be a hell of a, I'm hoping it's going to be a hell of a bull market.
They will, but if you look at the stats, that's why bear markets happen. Because everyone gets so bearish, they can't see it turning around. And they jump out, and everyone sells and attracts sellers. And then, typically, the most aggressive bounces from the bottom. So, literally, they'll rally, you'll get back to break even. Next, like, 2, 3 years, then they'll start climbing higher. So, that's what happens. So just jumping out of everything like that, you know, you'll probably... And there is stats to back it up. The biggest up days that happen in the market are very close to the biggest down days. And so it's a stat out there saying if you miss even the 10 best days of the stock market, which usually happen very close to the 10 worst days, because it almost, they're technically oversold. Like E-Energy now, it's massively oversold. And, you know, you won't believe how much companies can get oversold. It gets to the stage where it's just ridiculous valuation. And so you've got fear and greed comes in. So first of all, I had fear. And then all of a sudden, there's a little rally. People think, look at this price. And then people start changing their mind. They think, look how cheap that is. That's very cheap. They look at, you know, do they start piling some money in, and then all of a sudden the sentiment changes, start to rally strongly, and then you get almost the flip of a coin from people being very bearish, very bullish. And that's what happens to the markets. You know, they get to the stage where they become cheap, and people say, oh, and that's fear and greed. You know, the people don't want to miss out. But they will rally very quickly. And I don't want the statistics. If you missed the best 10 days of the stock market in 10 years or something, your portfolio will be something like 30%, you know, below where it should be if you just stayed in. So, so yeah, if you miss, so yeah, it will happen. But it's just anomaly as well, Steve. Right? If you notice, everyone's bearish, aren't they, about everything? It's all out there. We all know all the bad news. The bad news is out there. So it gets to the stage where one of the bad news can be out there now. Something maybe a nuclear war or something we don't see happening, or something we don't see happening. But everything we can think of is out.
Please don't say anything like that, because look, we said that before Brexit, and then the pandemic happened, and then the war happened. You know, what could actually come next? And like, there was always something around the corner.
Yeah. So, 78% of the stock market's best days occurred during a bear market or during the first 2 months of a bull market. So, if you missed the market's 10 best days over 30 years, your returns will be cut in half. Just 10 days. That's nuts, isn't it? When you think about it, so those very aggressive, you know, rallies happen in a bull market and the start of happen in a bear market and the start of a bull market. So if you miss those, your returns over 30 years will be cut in half. And so if you're jumping in and out because you're selling because people are selling, if you're going to trim a few because you're a bit worried and you've got no cash and overexposed, fine. But if you still believe in the company's doing well, don't, it'll come back. You're never going to guess that, you know. It'd be nice to just sit there with cash and then wait for a bear market to happen, and you think when you hit the bottom, it goes a bit further and a bit further and a bit further to the point where it gets ridiculously cheap, and you think, oh, I can't avoid this.
Do you know what, though? How many times have we been in the bull market now, and all of us have said, we should sell this now, we should sell this, and we've never sold it, and then the bear market comes very soon after, and then we're like, we should have sold. And that's happened to me probably twice now.
Yeah, but Steve, what did I talk about last week?
I know. It's the classic golden cross. I know.
So, that's all. From here on in, I will do research on companies, and the companies I hold, I'm holding now. So I will research on companies. Right now is not the time to sell because we're at the bottom of a bear market pretty much. So I'll wait for the uptrends to start. And regardless of, I'm not going to fall in love with any company, regardless of what's happening. You know, if that trend starts to roll over and the death cross happens, I'm out. That's it. And I will not be. It's quite simple to say this. I've got to make sure I hardwire my brain, even if everyone's very bullish and this starts to happen. I don't care. You can see the stats. You know, for 80% of the time, they're very accurate. You know, so you wouldn't bet against that. You would be a fool and a loser to bet against those kind of stats. So if it starts to roll over, get out and sit there, guys. Because do you know what? If you'd be sitting in cash now, of all the cash I'd had from from where I was, I've got some cash now. But I mean, you'd be laughing your head off. You think, come on, market, go lower because I've got loads of cash. And I genuinely believe over the next 5 years, you can make a lot of money. In fact, so the best time to make money in the market is after a bear market, and without doubt. So having a little bit of cash now or just having stocks now is good because it's pretty much a lot of it's priced in. A lot of it's priced in. So is anyone saying, have you heard any good news? That's a contrarian factor. No one's talking about good news at all. Everyone's talking about bad news. That's a very good sign. Because everyone has priced it in. Everyone has sold and can sell because they're so worried. Do you know what? No one's pricing any good news at all. No one's pricing it. And that means, it's almost like when you invest in a company that everyone thinks is going bust and it doesn't go bust, it rallies like crazy. You can do several 100%, so it's everyone's almost pricing in an economic catastrophe. But people are aware a recession's going to happen. And the market's down. Well, the AIM market's down was 40%. So they're aware of that. So that's why you should be a little bit, don't get out of the bottom here, but But also,
yeah, it's going to be an interesting one going forward with your new strategy. I have been thinking about it this week. I don't fully understand it because I'm not into it as much as you are, but I do get it. And actually, the more I thought about it this week, I think this is the strategy.
Yeah, I mean, I fundamentally look through the. It's got to be a good company first and foremost. It's very growing. You know, like I said, 20% top line growth. It's got a good value. I'm looking at, and now looking at EBIT to enterprise value. So I mean, you know, that's it.
It's not just one strategy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's going through multiple strategies, and this is the final one. Which basically, once you found that golden nugget, it is the golden nugget, it's not necessarily, as we know, it could be the best company in the world, but it's not necessarily going to still not plummet into a bear market. You know, which it will do.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah. So this final strategy is the one that kind of. Is the icing on the cake, really? Yeah,
Oh, Steve, I wanted to just 2 minutes on my spreadsheets. You wouldn't believe what I've done. It's phenomenal.
I know you've been sharing them with us this week on WhatsApp.
But yeah, growth and value, right? And then health, efficiency, and momentum. So they're going to have that, and so they're profitable companies. But just to explain just quickly, what you know, it's about the momentum, is about the moving averages. Basically, you know, I said last week, what is. You know, what moves the share price is volume, full stop, right? But you can't keep a track on volume and share price movement all the time. All the moving average does is basically track that volume going into the price. And if a share price goes above, say, the 200-day moving average, then people are now paying a higher price than people have paid for the last 200 days, at the average for the last 200 days. That is net buying. The only way that happens, because if you look at a 50-day moving average, it's just a shorter period. So over the last 50 days, the average price has been this. Now people are paying above that. Why does that happen? Because there's net buying. There's more people buying than selling. Because anytime there's more demand than supply, a price goes up. It's as simple as that. So when you see that start happening, first of all, above the 50-day moving average, it's net buying, but that's a shorter-term trend. And then all of a sudden, once you get above a 200-day moving average, that says a lot. That says people are now net buying over a longer period of time. That means they're paying up for the shares above the average price people have paid over the last 200 days. That's a very good sign. And so you just pay attention to that, and all of a sudden, then you get the 50-day moving average crossing up over the 200-day, and that shows not only is there longer-term buying, but people are also now buying it short-term. People are buying it short-term and long-term above the average prices. And so that shows net buying. There's only a certain amount of supply of shares, you know, and that's why, again, if you are in a company that's making a profit, they won't be issuing new shares all the time. Whereas loss-making companies, of course, they will issue shares, and that increases the supply again. So that messes up the net demand supply metric, because there's more coming onto the market. So if you've got a fixed sort of supply and the demand goes up, simple. It's basic economics, you know. And so that's why you should add the momentum thing in there as well. Do you know what? K3 Capital actually been bought out. It's so annoying. So I bought K3 Capital a few weeks back. I only had about 3 or 4% of my portfolio into it. Excellent company. Margins are cracking. Everything, you know, profitable, all that stuff. Then their offer this week of $3.50 a share, which my average is about $2.80, I think. It's not bad, but that was one of the stocks that fitted those filters. And I thought this would go on to be. They talked about $15 million of EBITDA in a year. And
that seems like quite a low buyout price, is that?
No. Yeah. Well, they were talking about, like I say, 50 million EBITDA. What did they do this year? I think it was about 20 million they did last year. But their target for the next 3 years was 50 million. So they're going to, you know, 2.5 times what they're on this year. So I saw, okay, they're going to, you know, be at least £5 a share, something like that. And they bought it at 3.50, and they've accepted it. That's so annoying. So the other one I want to have at the moment, it's still, you know, in that. Areas Argentix quite like. Steve, just have a look at that, Argentix, because I did say the chart is struggling to give up 120. They're very good value for money. If it comes back to, about quid odd, definitely, you know, and their operations are still good, which they are. They have plenty of cash, they're profitable. But those are two companies that fit in all those filters. You know, their growth, the good value, they were healthy balance sheets, they were very efficient, good margins, obviously profitable, and they had the momentum as well. But now they've been bought out. Listen, in this market, a profit is a profit, you know, but it was annoying that, you know, I didn't have a bigger position. And it was annoying that I think they could achieve a lot more than that over the long term. In fact, do you know what? Do you see, looking at momentum, XPF, the chart this week, very good and rallied. And it basically popped up above the 200-day moving average. I did say last weekend, didn't I? I said, we're now heading into an uptrend. No point selling here. If anything, you've got to buy here, if you've done your research, or hold on to it if you hold, because it's starting to go in an uptrend. The share price has gone over the 200-day moving average. The 15-day moving average has come up towards it. We're not far off. Let's look there. So the share price is at 20 pence. The 15-day moving average is at 18 pence. So literally, in a week or so's time, that will cross. The golden cross will happen. And then we'll be in a big uptrend. And then that takes about a year. In a bull market, it'd be longer than a year. But that's the trouble. The last trend, it was only a year, but it went from 8 pence to 32 pence on that golden cross thing. But that's because the market started rolling over. And I think, it probably could have gone for longer. But this time, this bull market, that trend could go on for a couple of years. There's plenty of stocks have gone on several years in an uptrend like that, without death cross happening. So it's nearly there. But yes. So do you know what, Steve? I just realised, I used to do every on the webinar for my Share Pickers Investment Club every week. I go through several companies, right? The fundamentals, the companies, and I have to fill in these spreadsheets. Literally all the financial data of this year, last year, from the income statement, balance sheets, and cash flow statement. It doesn't take me long, it's about 10 minutes per company, I suppose, 10, 15 minutes. But it's a ball ache, my neck hurts, my eyes hurt. And I've just found an API. It drags all the data in. I've done it largely. I've done it with Google Finance. You can drag quite a bit of stuff in from that. In fact, a lot of stuff in with that, but not the balance sheets and all that stuff. Like if an API, been messing around with it. When something doesn't work, you're messing around with some kind of code or formula or link or something, and it doesn't work, and it's kept happening all the time. And all of a sudden, you do something or you look something up on YouTube. You're learning, and then all of a sudden it populates and it fills it. Yes. And so I've done that now, so it's a lot faster. But
I get that with Excel sheets, because my sister's a whiz. She's an accountant with Excel, and I'm trying to do things, looking at codes, at the sums, and I can never work out. And I just send it to her. It's like, I want to do this, and literally within 20 seconds, she sends it back, and I'm like, what did you do? And it just worked. The whole spreadsheet just suddenly kicks into action. You're like, and it just some, yeah, I love that.
Yeah, I know. So I've got these things. It populates them, and of course, and then I've got other. So I've got one sheet where it populates, and then I've got other sheets that reference that cell to bring all the ratios in, the valuation ratios, all that stuff. And also, not only that, but the cells themselves color code to certain metrics and targets. So I love that. But not only that, I'm now linking from, different, it's probably quite basic for some people, but I'm also linking from different Google Sheets, pulling all data into one sheet so I can compare companies as well. So I love that. That's good. I love learning. That's part of investing, learning as well. But learning to do this is great. And I'm also going to put these sheets now. Normally, I used to do the webinars and send them out or send my link. But I'm going to put them on my website so you can display them on the site.
Just for the club?
Just for the club, yes. But you can either download it or view them on the website, and also the comparison one as well. So, but I'm loving that. It's slowly evolving. Over the last 18 months, I've learned so much more about investing, and a lot of that is tied to spreadsheets. I've learned as much about spreadsheets. Phenomenal. They are. Considering they look at your profile, all that stuff, and data. But considering Google Sheets are free, it's a phenomenal resource, isn't it?
Well, I don't. What is Google Sheets? I'm not 100% sure what
it is. They are Excel. It's basically Excel.
Oh, it's Excel.
So,
okay, right.
So they've ripped off, Google's ripped off every bit of Microsoft.
Right, it's the Excel. I got you. Yeah. Online version of Excel. Yeah.
And you can share, but it's almost it's probably not as complex as Excel. You can do everything. I don't know. Listen, there's so much stuff in there. You can put APIs in there, all that kind of stuff. So it's very you can get as complex as you want to, but conditional formatting, all the stuff, data entry, and all that. So it's a huge. But I think it's. It's just free. I think. Do you remember? I don't know how much Microsoft suite of stuff is, but it's like that's Google. It's free. Obviously, it's not free because I'm the product. If the product is free, your data is the product. I know they probably. I'm happy. I'm happy not to pay £700 a year from Microsoft when you get it free on Google. But
funny enough, I've actually just bought. I've just gone on to Microsoft 365. Is it? Just paying for it. Yeah.
Why?
Because I was. It's to do with how I send out invoices and stuff like that, because mine was out of date, and then clients weren't being able to open things, and sums weren't coming up right. So I was just, it was just getting frustrating. I was like, do you know what? For £60 a year, I'm just going to do it. And now everything works. So I'm like, yeah, whatever. It's fine.
Oh, 60 quid, that's not too bad. But
and it stays updated then. Cause that's the problem, is all these companies all use Office 365. And they send you a PowerPoint, certainly for my work, when they send you a PowerPoint to use in a production, and then I can't open the PowerPoint because I'm using an older version and they created it on a brand new version. So it was just basically caused me a headache. I was like, oh, I just couldn't buy it. And it's funny how you buy something and everything just suddenly works. You're like, do you know what? For 60 quid a year? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But absolutely. I get it from your point of view. You probably don't need it as much as I probably do.
No, I don't need that. But do you know what? Yeah, I'd just say, but like I said, I share these spreadsheets with a member of the club there. You can you download them into, you know, Excel, all that stuff. It's the same thing. It's basically a CSV file, aren't they? CSV, yeah. I think it is. Yeah, yeah. So it's perfect. Yeah, yeah. Marvellous stuff. But literally, you know, it's funny when you're looking around for things. You know, for a long time, I was thinking, how can I just download these figures? I'm copying and pasting from financial statements all the time, doing my head in, you know, my eyes hurting. And also, you look around, there is a technical way of doing it, but I tried it, it didn't work. And then just get the API in. But the API is free for a month, but I've got to pay about, I think it's about $19 a month, I think. But it's worth it, because it saves me about 10 minutes every time I do one. So, yeah, there we are.
Do you know what? Sorry, completely off. It's similar, but a different subject. From my old DJ days, I've got tens of thousands of music tracks in my MP3 library. And, like, over the time, you can imagine there's probably spelling mistakes with my semi-dyslexia of how I type anyway. And I found a bit of software years ago which basically scanned your library, just looked at the text, and it would then look on the internet for the similar track titles and artists, and it'll work out going, I think you spelled, and it'll work out like tracks and things you spelled wrong, and it basically just renamed all my library, went through all my spelling mistakes and just corrected it all, the actual track titles you find on their web. I thought, that's clever, isn't
it? Yeah, well, but you know what, someone just sent me a link, one of the members of the club just sent me a link for called Google AI, and it's about, you know, installing this little app API on your spreadsheets, whatever that, and it, you know, it suggests things for you. If you type something, and it corrects things, and you can suggest things, or just give me the this guy was doing an example of postcodes for America. He said, if I type in a city, add the state just in two letters in the next column, and it does it for it. You know, it's amazing. Yeah. But it's getting that way. It's very clever. But yeah, you don't automate too much, because if I automate this, but I want to get to the stage where a lot of this is automated, you know, so I can just literally do it, and it is now. So I've got, whoa, excellent. And even now I'm going to be up to uploading, you know, screeners in the documents to the websites. It's all good. But Marvis, are you watching the football tonight, Steve?
No. No, I'll have it on in the background just out of interest, but I'm not really going to watch it. I'm not into football.
No, it's a big game, isn't it?
Yeah, as I said, I'll probably have it on in the background, but I'll probably be doing something else.
Do you know what? Do you know why I hope England win?
Just so everyone's not miserable over Christmas?
Yeah, that, and it's good for the economy, isn't it? It's also good for boom battle bars. They show a lot of games in there. You know, so,
that's very true, actually.
But you imagine, I don't know what the stats is on it, but I would love to see the difference in spend in it if I'm losing and actually a World Cup final, because it's a huge amount of money goes through pubs and restaurants and bars and all that stuff because of this. And I think that'd be good for us. And if we beat France, France and England, you know, rivalry there is phenomenal, isn't it? You know, even the Brexit and all that stuff. Like, even recently, they said the CAC 30, which is their version of the FTSE 100, was bigger now in valuation than the FTSE, but it isn't now. It's flipped back over because our currency took a dip. That's why. But so much rivalry there. But it would help our economy, and it would damage France's. So there we are. Marvellous. Anyway, that's it. Anything else, Steve? Anybody watching any more kid stuff on TV?
No.
Is Wednesday still good?
I finished that last week. I'd already watched it last week.
Okay. I tell you what we mentioned, we didn't watch, actually. Watch it. It's very good, Steve. It's one in Cardiff. Megan's watching it. Educating, and they say Cardiff, or Educating Yorkshire. And it started in 2008, I think, up to 2017.
I have heard of it. It has been around a while.
Yeah, and I've sort of seen it in the background. But some of the schools, like the one in Cardiff, phenomenal. It's in Tremorpha, which is not a posh area, is it, Tremorpha?
No.
No, and they probably have their fair share of troublesome kids. But they are so supportive. Unbelievable. They are like your mates. They want to help you, but they teach. And you want to give these teachers, you know, a massive pay rise and just a medal or something, because they're doing a phenomenal job, and I couldn't do it. And it's worth watching. So it's on YouTube, you have to watch it. But educating Cardiff is educating Yorkshire, there's all over the country. But I wish they'd do them again, because they're excellent TV shows. But I wouldn't, you know, teachers deserve all the money they get. You know, give them a pay rise. It's good for the economy. Inflation erodes debt. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. All right. Any plans for the weekend, Steve?
No, nothing much really. I nearly went up for a little bit of a mountain walk this morning at Penivan in Brecon, but decided against it when I saw the wind chill was minus 15. I was like, yeah, I think I'll pass on that. That's a bit too cold, that, isn't it?
A bit challenging, that. In fact, Monty's gone football this morning, and I'm thinking, are you kidding? It's like I've got frost on my windows. It's like minus 3. And, you know, good thing is about this weather, though, finally, you know, I'll make this final point, is when Lola goes in the garden to do a number 2, it freezes.
It freezes.
Yeah, and I don't mind that. So it's a lot easier to pick up than warm, sort of sludgy stuff. And so, yeah, frozen poo. It's fine. It's,
no, it's, good, it's, good for the dog owners. Great.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Steve, speak next week. Right. Bye, 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 bye. Yeah.
Bye. The Share Pickers Weekend Podcast with Justin, Paddy, Peter and Steve. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.